Welcome back to 20 Minute Bio, and I'm your host, Aiden Lowe. This episode is the second half of my interview with Mr. Van Leeuwen back on August 26, 2021. Check out the first episode if you haven't yet, and let's just get right back into it. Let's go into the next segment of the show, which is like your general hobbies and your life. So could you talk about your most memorable trips abroad?
Yeah, I think that, you know, honestly, there are just so many memories because I pretty much half my life is abroad now. I don't even know if I consider the United States home anymore. You know, I look at it sometimes and I'm just like, what the heck is going on over there? I don't know, like to single out one instance is incredibly difficult, right? And I think that, you know, there are going to be a lot of personal ones too, right? Like the moments that led to marriage, or, you know, the development of that relationship, which I consider memorable, but also at the same time, probably not very exciting for listeners. But yeah, I think that some of my favorite memories in Taiwan have been actually out in nature. I think that Taiwan's nature is, it's a developing scene, right? It's actually come such a long way since I first came here. Like when I first came and surfed here, like nobody was surfing. Like the only surf shops were just like these like beach bums who just had like some like really bad boards, and they were just catering towards foreigners who wanted to get a surfboard. But if you look at the surf scene now, it's exploded, right? There's like international competitions coming here, right? The World Surf League down in Taitung, right? You've got like all of these like areas, like sections of the beach that are just shops now for surfers and surfing gear. So really that infrastructure is really starting to come in here. Just being a part of that culture, right? That blooming culture is something very foreign to me. And I consider it a very special experience, right? Because, you know, like when I was growing up in the States and I was surfing there, you know, the culture, it's old, you know, like the people who set up that culture, you know, they're like 60 and 70 now, right? So those guys were the pioneers of California surfing. And it was really cool that I got to be at least a little part of that same experience happening in Taiwan.
You also have mountain climbing and scuba diving and surfing. Do you have a preference towards which one? I mean, surfing is kind of your main thing, I think, right?
Well, you know, I mean, I do love surfing, I think, just because it's exciting. You don't really get that sort of excitement, I don't think, from mountain climbing. You know, you don't like, you know, you're not like adrenaline rushing and like,
yeah. Mountain climbing is more of like it's more of like the entire activity.
Yeah. Like one of my friends, I'm trying to remember exactly what they said, but they said that mountain climbing is, or I don't really call it mountain climbing, I just call it like backpacking. But he said backpacking is an exercise in long-term organization. So it's like before you go on any long-term backpacking trip, like 7 days, you just do a massive amount of planning. Like you got to plan for like, you know, bad weather or good weather. You got to plan for if this food is eaten by wildlife. You're just sitting there and you're just planning. So you just sit at home and then you just plan. And then you go out and you continue planning as you collect things for your massive plan. And then as you go out there, you just watch your plan unfold and then you come back. So it's just this huge planning exercise. And, you know, it is fun, but maybe part of that fun is also in that planning, right? Being prepared.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think that a big part of it is just like, you know, that you're dependent on all these different things for your own survival. So your job is to go out there and to account for those things over a long period of time. And it really kind of shows you how close you are to death in that regard. You know, if you took some of these things away, I could be dead. You know, if there's like a rainstorm out there and, you know, I don't have any like water gear and it's kind of cold, I could be dead. You know, I'm like 30, 40 miles, you know, like 3 days hike away from civilization, you know, that could be me dead. You know, I just forgot one thing. So it's like, you know, that sort of is exhilarating in its own way, right? Just mentally aware of it. But because you prepared for it, you're not actually that excited, right? It's not like, you know, your heart's beating and you're afraid you're going to die or anything.
Nice. So it's more like a humbling experience.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. And I think scuba diving is very similar, right? Because when you're down there, you're not like actually scared. But if you think about it for even just a second, you should be frightened.
It's danger. Everything around you can kill you if you don't have this thing on.
Yeah, it's just like if somebody squeezes this button, I could die. Like, like just fill up my BC with air and I just go
Yeah, and then you
rocket.
just go up. Oh my God, I had one of those experiences like this
Oh
scuba dive. I
no.
had a watch and it was like alerting. For some reason, I started floating up. I think it's because like the air got stuck in the BCD. So I
Oh
just
no.
had, yeah. And like for people who don't scuba dive, it's like before you go to the 5 meter mark, you got to take a break. Like when you ascend, you have to take breaks. Otherwise, your lungs explodes or something. Yeah, but I was floating. It's just like a very intense process when you see everyone going further away. And I tried to swim down, and it's just like, yeah. So it's not like it's really fun when you are aware of everything, but like as you said, one mistake can is very dangerous. So that
Yeah.
is also like part of the activity, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you were at like the 5 meter safety stop, and then you shot up, I think you'd probably be okay,
Yeah, but
because that's pretty
I
intense.
was like 15, 20 meters down. Oh, crazy. It was
Oh
crazy. It was my
yeah. One
first
second.
30 meter dive. So,
Oh, really? Congratulations. That's deep. That's really
yeah,
deep.
that is almost illegally deep considering my level. It was because that it was a 2-to-1 like a scoop coach to like a beginner ratio. So they thought it was
Wow, so you
okay.
have like two coaches with you, huh? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's always someone looking at us. It was just at that moment, that was an odd moment where I was at the back of the, when I was in the back of the group, so no one saw me. But everything else, it was like there was a coach overhead of you constantly looking at you. So it was a really safe experience. And I mean, usually 30 meter dives are reserved for AOWs, and I would only have an OW license, so it's very special to have an experience like that. And then like going down to 30 meters and then having the boat as well, like it saves you a lot of energy.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty cool, but you probably were only down there for like what, 5 minutes, and then you had to start coming back up, or how long were you down there for?
Actually it was like the like 30 meter dive, I think it's like 30 minutes.
Whoa, that's pretty
30
long.
I mean, the lowest we've been is like we stuck around for like 5 to 10 minutes, and then we had to slowly ascend our way up. Yeah,
Right,
but
okay.
the whole tank took 30 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense. 'Cause like if you go down too long, then that nitrogen starts seeping in there and you're
Yeah,
gonna get
and
the burns.
the air is ridiculously fast when like you exhaust the air ridiculously fast when you're down 30 meters.
Yeah, you can always tell an experienced diver from a less experienced one just by
Oh
how quickly
God,
their tank
like
will go.
they can have like what? They only spend 50 PSI on a single dive. And I was like, do you even breathe, bro? What is going on?
It's pretty cool.
Speaking of scuba diving though, I talk about it a lot in the previous episodes, which is like the destruction to the environment. So that's always something I constantly worry about. Like when I was like scuba diving, I constantly look at people's legs to make sure that they're not doing anything to the thing below, because we're always ridiculously close to the coral. That's just part of my ideology that if I'm coming to this environment, I need to minimalize any contact or any destruction of it as possible. But do you think that scuba diving being destructive to the environment in its nature, what is your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I think that scuba diving is inherently destructive, but so is basically any human activity in an area, right? You go hiking and you're causing erosion along a mountainside, right? So, I think that all you can really do is just try to minimize that, and that just comes with education and training. So I think that some of it could come down to local government regulations, like controlling the number of visitors to an area per year. It could come down to taxation for ecotourism to make sure that we have the resources to help in recovery of human coming in and visiting. But I think that in the end, my biggest thing is like diver training and awareness, you know, it's like you are very aware, and I don't know what training program you went to or, you know, how those teachers did their job, but, you know, I've seen a lot of my friends get trained and it's just a joke, you know, like they have this test and you can take it as many times as you want. And it's the same test. So you can like literally just memorize, oh, this one was D and I wrote C last time, you know? And then, you know, you're in there and you're studying for 2 days. There are people who can barely swim and they're thrown into the ocean. So they have no control of their body. So of course they're going to be running into things. Of course they're going to feel more comfortable touching down, right? Which is of course terrible for coral. And so ultimately what you have is this system that just pumps out scuba divers that are very, very ill-equipped to handle the situation. And that's not even taking into account the safety factor, right? I consider it extraordinarily dangerous to be taking somebody down there who has no buoyancy control, you know, not to mention swimming abilities. So, you know, it's just a very, very, very dangerous setup, in my opinion. And I think that it should change. Now, is there anything I could do about it? I don't think so, right? Because it's a huge economic thing. And, you know, they're not going to be changing that, I don't think, anytime soon. But I think it would be for the best, okay? And the more regulations there are. But, you know, how are you going to get those regulations in those beautiful coral environments that are in developing countries? Also, another thing that I'll point out is I think part of my bias comes from the fact that I got my diving certificate, both basic and advanced, and also part of the rescue diving. I didn't actually complete it, but I did a lot of the coursework for it. I got all of that from the University of Santa Cruz, right, or, you know, UC Santa Cruz. Yes. And that process was just intense. Like, in order to go into the class, you had to swim, like, I forget how long, I think it was like a mile under a certain time. You had to tread water for 10 minutes without touching the wall, right?
Oh, yeah.
You had to hold your breath and swim underneath, underwater for, I believe, 25 meters. And it was just very intense. And so most people just got filtered out. So everybody else was like, clearly they'd taken swimming classes, you know, or they'd, you know, been in the water for a long time in their lives. And then from there, you know, the training was just incredible. You know, they made us do all this stuff that made us very familiar with the equipment. And then to give you an example of also emergency situations, they made us go down on our very first dive. They took us down to Monterey Bay, freezing water, made us go down to about, I want to say, I don't know. Okay, so let's see. I guess that would be about 10 meters. Because I'm thinking it in feet.
In
right?
feet, yeah.
But they took us down about 10 meters. And then at 10 meters, they turned off our air and then asked us to emergency go up, right? That's called the CESA, right? The Controlled Emergency Safety Ascent. So they had us do that with a full lung of air, right? So all of a sudden, you had to experience the getting shot up. Oh, by the way, the professor filled up our BC with air too. He just like hit that button, we just shot up.
Oh,
but we were trained on what to do, right? Which is to constantly blow out, right? You'll feel this like pressure in your lungs.
Yeah, constantly. You have to release it as soon as possible.
So everybody every year had to do one CESA just to kind of know how to get out of the situation without giving yourself an embolism.
That's actually, that is really hardcore. But it's a necessary thing, as you've said. And you also mentioned like being environmentally conscious, right? Like that's,
that's a big part of it, right? So that I mentioned was mostly about safety and stuff. But I think that when you get that sort of training, you know, you learn to control yourself. And I think that controlling yourself is very big in terms of environmental damage. You know, not kicking the coral, not losing your neutral buoyancy. You know, that's huge, right? I believe that's probably some of the biggest damages in terms of scuba diving. Outside of that, there's also educational stuff though, like the, like your sunscreen has to be a certain type.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, that sort of stuff I think can come from anybody really, as long as everybody's being educational about it. Like, I think any dive center can disseminate that information, right? But that knowledge of how to control yourself in water, that's something that takes, I think, a little bit more training. I mean, I will add though that, it still is overall a net negative to the environment, right? Because
yeah, definitely.
If you think about it, like, how did you get to Green Island, right? You had to fly there. Okay, that's a lot of fossil fuels. You're leaving a print, and that's obviously going to impact the environment no matter what, right? So no matter what you say, it's still going to be a net negative, right? But you can definitely make it less negative overall.
Yeah, no, I agree totally as well. And now we arrive at our last segment, which is biology. So you actually recommended me the book, The Evolutionary Rainbow. It was during our counseling session. And then I just started talking about homosexuality for some reason. Yeah. I think I asked you the question. It was listed as a mental illness before. And then does that mean that as long as enough people gather around this mental illness and advocate for it, suddenly like it's okay because like people get offended, like stuff like that? Like, I had a very cynical view of that. And I think after some research, as well as like reading the book, it talked a lot about diversity being the most natural thing. It's not just about, it's not black and white in nature at all. And in terms of homosexuality, there's this really cool article or really cool research that I saw, is that homosexuality may be evolved for social reasons and not just purely sexual reasons. I think a lot of people, they judge something based like on what it's right, based on how it benefits like the offspring or how it works in nature, but they don't take into account like the diversity factor or or any other factors other than like Darwinism and like sexual selection. So that's kind of the thing I got out from that conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think that, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm sure that there are a lot more people who are well-versed in it than I am. Why does society, choose to target certain people and do certain things? I think that that's a very long conversation that I couldn't possibly do justice to in just a short tidbit. I think it's complicated. I think there are lots of different factors. I don't think it's good though. And I think that groupthink is, one of the dangers that we have to acknowledge when we're in a society. Are we doing something simply because everybody else is thinking it? Or are we doing things because we've thought about it individually and, we've empathized with other people. We've tried to put ourselves into other positions and really understand what it feels like to be the target of discrimination and things like that. And from there, just making your own decision, right? And, I understand that religion comes into this as well, right? There's religious laws and stuff like that. It just adds a whole degree of complexity that, I think it's just, in the end, ultimately still a good thing, right? So even though there are going to be people who disagree with this or disagree with that, I think for me to say I love diversity and then just like shoot down all of the diversity around me that doesn't agree with me is very hypocritical. And so, I do my best as like a world traveler to refrain from doing that as much as possible, right? To really try and embrace that diversity, right? To still have like my own lines, my own bubbles of what I think and advocate for them in a reasonable way, but at the same time, respecting that diversity, right?
Definitely. And just the last thing is, I wanted to switch gears about is just STEM majors in general. There's a sentiment online that science is the least practical among STEM majors, STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math. So due to the high level of specialization to get a job, you need to be a master's or PhD, or otherwise you won't get a job. So, I mean, as a biologist before, do you think like knowing this knowledge, gaining from biology or gaining from marine biology outweighs the disadvantages?
I think that it's, you know, I think we kind of touched upon this before too, right? About like depression and science. but I think
depression
that
and science. Yes.
I think it comes down to like the individual and what they think it's about and whether or not they're passionate about that topic. Because the truth is, if you're really passionate about it, you can make it work, right? And obviously, you know, the better positions are going to be with masters in science and things like that. Okay, but there are still really good opportunities for people who only pick up an undergrad, right? You just can't expect to have like, you know, the cultural depiction or the societal depiction of what a scientist is per se for your life, you know, but you can still have a happy life, right? So one of my friends from marine biology school, right, well, from our degree program, he actually works up in Seattle. He's home based in Seattle, but he gets on fishing boats and he works for the government. And what he does is he identifies fish all day, right? So he just goes out and he sits on giant fishing boats, and then he counts the fish, and then he identifies the fish, and he also counts the bycatch, which is a huge problem in fishing, right? Which is, you know, what the total amount of the fish that you catch that you weren't supposed to catch, right? You accidentally caught it. So he looks at that, he monitors it, and then he records it for the government for, you know, census reasons. And in the end, you know, it's something that you can do and is very beneficial and super important. And it uses your degree without having a master's or a PhD, right? So the master's and PhD can open up other things more in terms of like research, like sitting in a laboratory and publishing papers. But you don't have to do that, right? There's still plenty of things that you could do, right? You could do what I did, which is work as a lab tech, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's good work, you know, and you do get paid a decent amount of money. And, you know, if you work there long enough, you can still make some pretty good money, especially in like the Bay Area or something like that. And people respect you. You know, you're the person that makes the lab work. You know, they can't do their work without you, so they have to respect you, you know? And then on top of that, you also have like, you know, field biology work that you could do without a master's, that's more about environmental conservation. For me, you know, I actually wasn't really interested in doing lab work. I wanted to work in Monterey Bay Aquarium. Because I love fish and I love creating that ecosystem for fish, and I love just like fish tank design. I couldn't get a job during the recession there, so I just kind of gave up on that. But you know, so I guess my point is there's still a lot of room for people to go in it if they're passionate, right? But ultimately you can't really expect to make a lot of money. That's what I would say. Now if you do want to make a lot of money, number one, I would pursue minimum master's, but probably also a PhD. Number two, I would go into something that is economically lucrative, okay? Something that's, if you're in America, something that is associated with, you know, the defense of the nation or economic security or, you know, oil. You know, if
geology.
Yeah, geology, right? And marine geology too, right? But it, you know, if that's what you want, then you have to be very okay with not really following your passions per se. Okay, and if it all lines up, then that's great. Go do it.
The whole thing I took away from this is that passion is the most sustainable thing if you want to pursue a career. Especially apparent in science, because it really depends on the passion that you have, where you can develop more branches or develop more possibilities for yourself to make you happy. And the last section that we have is going to be, I didn't tell you about this, a rapid fire Q&A that I've asked for. Yeah, that I asked people from Instagram to submit their questions. And so, I mean, just no pressure, like one or two sentences will do.
Okay.
The first one is water wet?
Is water wet? I feel like water has the quality of making other things wet. But can it make itself wet? That is the question, isn't it?
I don't think, if you put it that way, I don't think so.
I feel like the water can make my fingers wet when I touch them.
Yes, but water itself cannot wet itself. Yes.
But can it not? I don't know. It's touching itself.
It's all one thing. It's all one thing. All right, so no. Next question. What is your relationship between your wife and your dog? In other words, how are you doing?
Wait, what is the relationship between my wife and my dog? Let me just go ahead
No. What is the relationship with your wife and your dog? That's my part. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. I think that like my, we're doing quite well right now. Right now we're kind of in this phase where we're thinking about transitioning from Taiwan, actually. So it's put us in a position where we want to kind of think about a lot in terms of planning. But for the moment, it's very strong. You know, we get along very well, of course. We love to do everything together, right? So we work out together. We run a lot together. During the pandemic, we ran at like 2 to 3 a.m. in the morning together.
2 or 3 a.m.? Wow.
Yeah. Just to occasionally bring that mask down, right? When no one is there.
Yes.
We've been taking our dog out in the river park. We just put him on a U-bike bicycle, basket, and then just like drive him around. It seems dangerous. Like we're not wearing helmets, but as long as we go slow, then it should be okay, I think. Ultimately we're doing great. We're living the life in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And final question is, will you become a professor one day?
Oh, well, actually, it's kind of linked, but I do plan on going back to pick up another degree from the United States. The school I'm looking at is actually UC Davis. I figured you guys would be interested in that because, you guys are all looking at school right now too. So I've actually taken my own suggestions and I've already Zoomed with the administrators there, right? I've talked to the people who do graduate degree programs there. I'm not entirely sure what I want to do, but they've shown interest, right? They've talked to me about it. The main reason I want to go there is because my mom lives nearby. I don't really like how expensive it is, so I might just end up going somewhere else. But we'll go ahead and I'll decide a little bit later. But I think that if I do go in that direction, it's either going to be science education or something more related to administrative work and education overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. And so it is a possibility for someone to go to university and then see your face there as well.
Yeah, it's definitely something that could happen, just like teaching teachers, right? But they'd have to be in like a teaching program, right? I don't think I would be able to teach.
But there's always this fantasy, like, oh, Mr. Van Leeuwen is going to be with me forever. From fifth grade all the way to university. That's what everyone's like wanting to know. Because everyone kind of knows if you have that determination, you can achieve it. So.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, I've thought about these jokes as well. Like, what am I going to say to 12 Ho, like on their last little
Ooh,
day?
All right, we'll save that. That's a little bit too emotional.
but I have all these like funny things that I probably won't do. Like, for example, I was thinking about getting a bunch of adoption papers and then just like setting them at the front and be like, look guys, if you need to be adopted, just like here are the papers. Or I feel like I've already, I've been there long enough. And then the other one that I was thinking about was like maybe secretively apply to all of the same university together. And then we just all go to that same school. But no, honestly, I think that it would just be kind of a little bit of a joke, but I think that it's been a very interesting experience for me as well as you guys, just being with the same group for so long, and I think it's been very rewarding. So
that would be the end of our interview. Thank you for spending well over an hour talking with me. We started from just career and then we went on to education and then scuba diving and then like biology in general. So we touched on a lot of topics and hopefully this will be entertaining for anyone who listens to it. But I certainly have fun myself. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Aiden. A very engaging question. So you're doing a great job. And I can imagine you being a journalist in the future very easily. But I don't know if we ever talked about it, but yeah, journalism could be the way to go.
I'm open to anything. Yes.
One more thing, though. And I want to say I'm very impressed that you got through that Joan Roughgarden book. Right? You know, it's not easy to read.
It's not easy to read. I mean, admittedly, I did skip a few chapters. So it's not like it, because it's more of like a textbook, I think, because of the length. Yeah, but I did find a lot of things in the rough. I have like a notebook about it.
But still, good job. You made it through. And I'll see you in 6 days.
Ooh, yes. I'll see you in 6 days. All right.
See you later, Aiden.
See you.